We're talking about the film Somebody's Daughter, in which indigenous women, Native American women, are standing up. Their tribes are standing up for them to defend themselves against an epidemic of murder and crime and human trafficking across the country. The numbers, as we just heard in the last hour, are staggering. In this hour, we're going to talk to David Sicke, who is from the Coushatta tribe in Louisiana. He's the vice chairman of that tribe, been on the tribal council four terms, and is going to share with us the situation for his people and how he sees this new film and what he hopes the impact will be. We'll be right back. David Sicke is the vice chairman of the Coushatta tribe, which is located in southwest Louisiana, has 944 members. We welcome him to Coast for the first time. Hi, David. Thanks for being here.
Hi, George. Good morning. A housekeeping correction. I am currently the tribal chairman for the Coushatta tribe.
There you go. Yeah, we got the big guy here then. Good deal. So you've seen the film by now, the Somebody's Daughter?
I have. I have seen it several times.
Share with me your impressions.
Well, I think, as you guys know, and I mean, speaking with Rain this morning, the numbers are just staggering, and it's eye opening, and it's shameful, it's tragic, and you know, as you heard, one in three Native American women will be raped in their lifetime here in America, and you know, just to hear those numbers here in our country is just absolutely mind blowing. And shameful, the movie is just profoundly sad, and a wake up call to all of us here in this country, and you know, just the numbers affected that we know of are horrific, and yet the full scope is impossible to document. I can share with you guys this morning that, for example, here in our state of Louisiana, you know, our people are categorized, in which we recently learned by coroners and the Department of Health and Vital Statistics as other. So to this day, there's no real accurate accounting of MMIW victims in our state of Louisiana. And sadly, this situation is familiar to many Native American communities and nations around this country.
You know, in the films, so many of the issues involve economic circumstances. Gang members and others come in, they exploit tribes because of the economic situation. I don't know, the Coushatta tribe, what you have 944 members. Is there a reservation? Is the economy stable? What's your situation?
Right. We do have a land base of approximately 7,000 acres here in the state, and we're located in southwest Louisiana, we reside between Lake Charles, Louisiana, and Lafayette, Louisiana. Those are the two major cities that are relative to our location that people might be familiar with, It's absolutely, tribes will probably face, you know, external influences over to wherever they may be located. And every tribe will be, you know, unique and have their own challenges. Here at our tribe, thankfully, we are doing a decent job of being proactive against these types of challenges that we're speaking of this morning. So the idea is to be ahead of it, to be ahead of the problem, and to dedicate and commit resources to our tribal law enforcement so that they may be on the lookout and be aware of some of the trends that may be negatively affecting other tribes around this country, which some tribes seem to be overwhelmed from speaking with tribal leaders and meeting with tribal officials around the country in the last year or so. So again, our tribe, thankfully, is dedicating the resources and providing the support necessary for our tribal law enforcement officials to do their jobs and to make sure that they're monitoring anything and everything that might be related to these types of activities that could negatively affect our tribal people, and not only that, but our entire tribal communities that reside in and around our reservation areas. So, but again, it was very eye-opening for us to learn that here in our state, we were Native Americans are categorized as other. Yeah. It revealed that it was almost as if we don't exist, as if our women and children are invisible here. And I think the documentary, from my viewpoint, it gives voice to some of those silenced, and it's a documentary that puts lawmakers and including just elected officials around the country, not only in the state, that these women and girls are not invisible, and the documentary ensures that the tragedy can no longer end, nor ever from this moment on, be a silent crisis.
A lot of the cases in the film, they're very moving. You see the pictures of these young women who are now dead and gone. They've been murdered or they are missing. Right. They're in Montana, North Dakota. It's heartbreaking, the stories. And it's heartbreaking how some of the cases were the ball was dropped by law enforcement that was involved. That's tribal, BIA, and federal. What about for your tribe? Have you had murders of young women in your tribe? And is your tribal police, are they on top of it?
Here, thankfully, again, I'm George. We have not had any murdered or missing women here in our tribe. But go ahead, George.
I just said good, but please
absolutely,
continue.
Absolutely. And again, what this documentary does is that it raises awareness not only for the outside communities, non-Indian communities outside, but also for tribal nations and tribal leaders and tribal people. It's a wake-up call for everyone, like I mentioned a minute ago. And whether it be to step up our efforts or to, again, to be proactive in monitoring and trying to be ahead of this nationwide crisis. So again, our tribal government is committed to providing the resources and the support necessary to offer anything and everything that we can to our tribal law enforcement officials to make sure that, again, we stay ahead of this this trend.
A lot of people, non-tribal people, Americans, the rest of us, the white society, and largely, there's a lot of guilt left over for what has happened to tribes, for indigenous people here. And I think that would be a complicating factor, is the people who don't want to face up to the responsibility they have for a situation that exists on reservations and with tribes across the country.
Right. I think that's accurate. I think to assess the situation as it exists now, but I think law enforcement in general. I'm not making excuses for anyone, but law enforcement in general around the country, whether it be tribal or non-tribal or just overwhelmed in certain cases, for a lack of funding and lack of staffing to be able to combat and confront some of these challenges that these communities are facing. Obviously, we're seeing the old issues, long-standing issues that communities generally face. But this is something, murdered and missing women and indigenous women. This is something that, again, has been on the increase for quite some time without anyone having raised awareness or taken note of it, perhaps. And I think it's absolutely imperative that we all join forces, number one, to continue raising awareness, whether it be through a documentary such as this, such as this one that we're speaking about today, or whether it be raising awareness jointly between tribal communities and non-Indian communities and entities. So it's the moment could not is appropriate now to continue speaking for the voiceless and deserving of a potential for righteous revolution concerning Native Americans, I think, in my opinion.
You know, it's a presidential election year. People are out stumping for votes. A lot of candidates, at least in the Democratic primary. Does your tribe have enough voting power to attract attention of these elected officials? Did they come around and solicit your votes and seek your opinions?
Voting power, yes, and that can be looked at in a number of ways. The Coushatta tribe is one of the top. One of the top 10 largest private employers in the state of Louisiana. Even though we are one of four federally recognized tribes here in the state, and yet even though we number less than 900, less than 1,000, we currently number 961 members in our tribe. And yet, but our total workforce, the Coushatta tribe employs close to 2,400 people that come from 16 Louisiana parishes. Specifically in Allen Parish, where we reside, our county, as you guys would refer to it. In Allen Parish, where the Coushatta tribe's headquarters are located, we employ 68% of Allen Parish, and in the adjacent parish of Jefferson Davis Parish, we employ 4% of that parish. So what that means is that the Coushatta tribe's footprint is significant. Not only, again, the tribe may be a small tribe, but it's one of the largest employers in the state. So again, from that perspective, the tribe can have significant impact in the way elections are decided here in the state. So, and we do maintain good, friendly relationships with the outside community, whether it be local, regional, state, and including on the federal level. So we do have communication with and good friendships with our current elected officials. But again, during election season, candidates are usually aware that Coushatta tribe has to be a stop on their tours. So
in the film, Rain explores the idea that extractive industries, mining industries, oil and gas, they come in. They exploit nature. They take things out of the ground. They set up these man camps, which are magnets for trouble, for drugs and prostitution and booze. Southwest Louisiana, I would think, has been a home to extractive industries for a long time. The oil industry in the Gulf has been there a long time. I would think that maybe the situation is different because it's entrenched. It's not a temporary kind of an industry. It's been there forever, that it's not quite the same kind of a problem.
Right. You bring up a great point, George. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, that every tribe you will find across this country is not facing the exact same situation as as other tribes. So you have to look at tribes and their geographic locations separately. And as you made a great point that, Louisiana has been the hub for the oil and gas industry for several decades now. And so, again, the tribe is situated geographically in oil and gas country, in ag country. Some of these things that we're looking at or some of the challenges that we look at are familiar to us. We're seeing different and hearing different challenges coming into our communities. Here at the Coushatta tribe, thankfully, we also enjoy good relationships with our local and regional law enforcement agencies. So There's a lot of information sharing and a lot of best practices that are shared between the tribal law enforcement agencies, and also other law enforcement agencies. So that's a benefit to us and to other law enforcement, non-Indian law enforcement agencies here in our case.
Well, a lot of the problems that pop up in investigating missing and murdered Indigenous women deal with jurisdictional issues. The tribal police maybe don't have jurisdiction in something that happens off the tribal lands. The BIA is non-existent in some cases in investigating these. Is BIA active in your area? Do you have BIA officers who patrol your lands?
No, we don't. Here at this tribe, we do not have BIA presence. We do interact with BIA and law enforcement, but to a certain extent. It's very limited. I'm very proud to share that the tribe owns and operates its own tribal law enforcement, which has been around since for close to three decades now. And but as far as BIA presence at the tribal grounds here in Louisiana at Trishana, that is not the case. But we do have exchanges and dialogue and visitation site visits from BIA from time to time. But for the most part, I'm very proud to report that the Coushatta has full control and authority over all of our law enforcement operations here. So, but like I said, we have the benefit of having good working relationships with other law enforcement agencies here in the region. So again, there's a lot of information sharing that goes on, and a lot of best practices that are shared among the other agencies. So again, that's a huge benefit to us, and we have maintained those friendly avenues and relationships and lines of communication for quite some time now. So, and that's important, I think. That should be a lesson to all of us, that's going to be key as we move forward in trying to explore common challenges, but not only that, finding common solutions to some of the problems that we're facing. So very, very important for tribal nations and tribal communities to realize that, hey, you know what, we're going to have to pool our resources and share each other's knowledge in whatever shape, form, or fashion that takes. That's totally up to each tribe.
You know, some of the jurisdictional issues that we discussed with Rain, I'm not sure if they apply to your tribe or not, but you would support the legislation that he was talking about, which gives the tribes the authority to have some kind of jurisdiction over non-tribal members who commit crimes on tribal grounds.
Absolutely. That we would totally support that. Because again, that is a major issue. Jurisdiction should be a huge part of this discussion, which it is, which thankfully it's headed that direction now. But that is a major, major concern for all tribal nations around the country, that our ability to have authority over non-Indians who commit crimes against Native Americans on tribal reservation lands. So I would certainly, definitely support wholeheartedly the legislation that Rain spoke of this morning.
We're talking with David Sickey of the Coushatta Tribe. He's the chairman of the Coushatta Tribe in Southwest Louisiana. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines with your questions. We're talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women and the efforts to raise profile of this issue. Glad you're with us tonight, everyone listening. We're talking with David Sickey, the chairman of the Coushatta Tribe of Southwestern Louisiana, a tribe that has a long and colorful history. The primary conversation tonight in this half of the program has been about murdered and missing Indigenous women and the effort to raise awareness of what's been going on across the country for a lot of tribes. We'll be right back and open up the phone lines with your questions and comments right after this on Coast to Coast AM. David, before we go to the phones, I was looking at the website about your tribe's history. There's some great stuff there. Yes, sir. You know, we have a we have a perception of tribes as being male dominated. We see movies of warriors and chiefs and things of that
right.
sort. And but as we heard from Rain, there and we learned in that film, there are many tribes that are matriarchal, that are very equal. In your tribe, it says on your website about honoring women and having them serve as delegates, and it's pretty evenly balanced then, right?
Absolutely, it is. In Rain's right, you'll see tribes, many tribes across the country, they have a focus and on in a proud history of a matriarchal society. And that proud tradition continues today. We hold the women in our tribe with deep reverence, and that is, you know, that just makes this issue here of MMIW more vivid and more important, I think, because of that. It's true. This tribe is matriarchal society, just like many other tribes across this country. So we're very, very proud of that, and we hold women in our tribe in high regard and reverence. So that is absolutely true. And I also forgot to mention that, you know, out of the 961 members in our tribe, approximately 40% are 18 and under. So this issue of MMIW is extremely important, especially for this modern day tribal government, because, you know, as you know, I mean, like we just mentioned, it's an unnerving crisis and an epidemic. So to, you know, as the chairman for this tribe, again, the idea is to try to stay ahead of these challenges that are just overwhelming some of the other tribal communities across the country.
I know from your website too that one of your challenges is, and I can't imagine how you maintain this, is to keep the language alive. You have, you know, 961 members. You're surrounded by people who do not speak that language, and somehow you've managed to keep it alive all this time. That's quite a challenge too.
It is. That's a challenge not only for this tribe, but for some tribes have already crossed that bridge, as far as trying to preserve and document their ancient the language of their ancestors. And it is a challenge here in this tribe. You know, the fluent speakers are becoming less and less as the years progress. And you know, many things go into that. You know, there's marrying outside of the tribal community, and some members of our families moving away outside of the immediate reservation area. So there's many different contributing factors to that. I don't want to call it erosion of the language, but you know, the fluency of our language is becoming less and less. And as you know, language is a big part of any culture's identity. So, but on the flip side of that, the tribe, I'm very proud to report that the tribe has undertaken an aggressive initiative especially in the last decade or so, to enhance our language programs. We even have a language committee made up of tribal elders that are documenting the language. We've also published a Kashada dictionary that comes with an audio disc of our elders speaking the language of Kashada. And so, again, we have really beefed up our efforts in language preservation and documentation, and also creating teaching materials that our tribal youth and members of our community can use to help preserve their language.
Well, good, good. We'll return to the topic at hand, the missing and murdered Indigenous women. I know there's a lot of folks on the phones who want to ask questions about it. On the wildcard line, Carlos in San Francisco. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning, Mr. Nick. And thank you for bringing attention to this subject. With regards to this jurisdictional changes that are being made, I'm just within regards to the specific to the region of a reservation, there was the issue of sex crime offenders. And especially like against, you know, minors. And I'm wondering, are Indian reservations subject to requiring that those people convicted of these crimes are also listed on the Megan's federal registry of sex offenders, or are they somehow exempt from that?
David?
Okay, George. Okay, great. Great question. That comes up frequently. very good question and very good point. I'm proud to report as far as the tribes have to pass a their own tribal codes and ordinances as it relates to non-Indian individuals residing or visiting reservations. For example, I'm very proud to report that our tribal council, the Coushatta Tribal Council, in 2019 passed its first ever sex offender registration code, which requires, like this, like the gentleman just mentioned, sex crimes offenders to register with the tribal police and to make it known that they are either residing on tribal lands or visiting tribal lands. So it requires any individual, whether they be tribal or non-Indian, to register with the tribe and make it known that they are, again, a sex crime offender. So, again, some tribes are ahead of it. Some tribes need to put in place their own tribal laws and codes. So, again, in our case, in 2019, the Coushatta Tribal Council adopted the sex offender registration code, and that is tribal law as we stand today. So,
thanks for that call. We're going to go to the first time caller line, Peter in British Columbia. Hi, Peter. You're on with David Sickey.
Hello, George.
Good morning.
Oh.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
I'm calling from McKenzie. I'm pretty close to the Highway of Tears, and I've driven it lots. And I grew up next to natives. I've worked with the villages. I've worked with many of them over the years. I have many that are friends. And when it comes to, like in BC and Canada, we have the RCMP that deals with the all crimes. We don't have tribal police on the bands. I know one guy that was shot 3 times in the stomach and on the reserve, and his death was called a suicide. I know another guy that was run over by his wife, and she backed up and drove over him at least 5 times and then drug his body down the road, and that was called an accident. So I'm talking to the police afterwards, and I'm asking how can they do this, because they know who did it. They know what happened. And what the cop told me was that in Canada, the police are not allowed to press charges. They have to recommend it to the Department of Indian Affairs. Department of Indian Affairs does not want bad statistics. And they decide that, well, the person was drinking and it happened when they were drunk, so it's not likely to happen again. We're just going to call it a suicide, or we're going to call it an accident, and that keeps our statistics looking right. I know one girl that died, and she went missing about 20 years ago. Her parents know who she was with the day she died. They know where she was going. They know the two guys that were with her, and they both come off the reserve. She went partying, and she never came back. These guys say she wandered off. We never seen them. And meanwhile, they ended up with some of her personal effects. Now we're 20 years later, and she's sitting there talking about, her mother's talking about the Highway of Tears, and she's saying she went off and she was probably hitchhiking. It was probably someone picked her up and she was hitchhiking. And they're willing to pass the blame off the reserve away from them. And it's, like, to me, it's really frustrating, because the people on the band, usually when there's a death, they know. And I've been there when someone died, and I've been listening to them the day they died. They'll tell you what happened. They'll tell you who did it. They'll tell you the circumstances. the next day, it's like there's a zipper and they clam up and they won't say a word because they don't want anybody to know about it. I live with them. I stay with them. I work beside them. So you kind of have to respect their wishes. It drives you nuts, but you have to respect their wishes, even though you know it's wrong.
Peter, you raised some interesting points. I want to get David's input on that. David, the idea of passing the blame, we heard that in Rain's film, you know, somebody's daughter, that tribal police sometimes will do it. The BIA will do it. The FBI will do it. In the case that Peter mentioned, the RCMP had jurisdiction, and I guess the FBI would have jurisdiction on your for some crimes on your tribal lands. Primarily, though, if a crime is committed on your tribal lands, it's tribal courts and tribal police that would deal with it?
Right. In our case, yes. And again, to that gentleman's point, I can't speak specifically to his circumstances, obviously, but here in our case, right. To a certain extent, depending on the level of crime and severity of the crime, the Coushatta Tribal Police would have jurisdiction over that individual. And obviously, major crimes, the federal government, the feds would take over. But again, I can't speak specifically to that gentleman's scenario. I just don't have I'm not familiar with that, with those specifics. So, I would leave it to the First Nation leaders in Canada to comment on that specific issue. But coming back to the, you know, as far as jurisdiction issues, you know, we must have a congressional Oliphant fix. And, you know, the Oliphant versus Suquamish Indian tribe, the Supreme Court ruling in 1978 stripped tribal jurisdiction over non-Indian members on Indian lands. And, you know, the Reduce, Return, Recover Act proposed in the movie seeks to fix that. You know, they're not exempt, but many of them don't report as sex offenders, particularly the fossil fuel man camp workers don't register when they come into Indian country. So, but again, depending on the scenario in our tribe, the Coushatta tribal law enforcement officials would have jurisdiction over certain crimes that occurred on tribal land. So, you know, in our case, it's a little bit different. And again, I wish I could elaborate and talk specifically about that gentleman's scenario, but at this point, I simply can't do that. So
okay, we'll go west of the Rockies. Stan in Utah. Good morning, Stan.
Hi, guys. Thank you. Thank you for exposing this. Does your guest have a theory, or what's the best idea? Who's perpetrating all these crimes? Is it random? Is it organized? Is it what's going on?
Good question, David.
Right. From what I've learned, having had some involvement with the film and the filmmakers and speaking with tribal officials around the country. Again, thankfully at Coushatta, you know, we don't have a problem. yet, as when you compare it to other tribes around the country, but from what I'm hearing, you're seeing many different things occurring, random, organized. It can be a whole slew of things. So, to answer that question, it's not just one single thing. Is a simple answer.
Stan, I would tell you that the film explores that to some degree, and it talks about gang infiltration of reservations and tribal lands. A lot of gangs who come into places like North Dakota and Montana, drawn by the idea of a lot of easy money where the extractive industries are doing well. The gangs come in, bring drugs. They end up exploiting women, and a lot of that ends up in violence. That's pretty much, David, how you understand it?
Absolutely. Yes, that's correct. That's accurate.
I will try to get one more call in. East of the Rockies, Joseph. Hi, Joe.
Hi, George. I'd like to thank your guest, David, and particularly like to thank your guest, Rain, for bringing this to the attention of a lot of people. I've been reading about this and studying this for 30 years, back to the Trail of Tears up in British Columbia. Then I started hearing all about it from Wind River and Rosebud, Pine Ridge, and around Montana and Wyoming and there. And now I'm starting to hear about it down on the Big Rez, down, you know, south of Las Vegas there with the Dene people, the Navajo. And it seems to just be escalating at enormous proportions. And this predates a lot of what I'm talking about before the gang and the cartel era. And so I've always been perplexed at the suppression of a lot of the news and the lack of awareness, but I think this is just such a great thing. I felt like I had to call in and thank you guys and, you know, take my hats off to you.
Well, thanks, Joseph. David, maybe we end with this question. We got about a minute to go, and that is, you know, the tribes can often, at least in my experience, can sometimes be a closed society, that they don't share things with outsiders or with outside law enforcement. Is that true to some extent?
It can be. Again, you hear and just different things out there, you know, just in the community. But I think that that trend has improved over the years, over the decades, especially as tribal police law enforcement programs have become more sophisticated and more organized and better funded. But I think, again, the lack of funding in certain cases can contribute to this problem as far as trying to get ahead of it and trying to confront it and combat these things. So, again, we need more law to be on our side. And secondly, we tribes and tribal governments and tribal law enforcement programs could certainly use more funding to beef up their staff and their resources, whatever it may be. But but coming back to, you know, the previous gentleman's question and point about, you know, what is contributing to this problem on reservations. I mean, if I had to guess, you know, if I had to say primarily what would be the top two, it would be organized crime and gangs and drug cartels. That's what we're seeing, and that's what we're learning, and law enforcement can certainly back that up as well.
All right, David Sicke, we're out of time. I thank you, Chairman of the Coushatta Tribe. I've learned so much tonight. The film is terrific, Somebody's Daughter. We have links on our website so people can check it out, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again sometime. Thank you. Thanks also to my earlier guest, Rain, and to Evan Ratliff, and to my colleagues there at Coast, Michael Cosio, Donna Walker, webmaster Lex Lonehood, Dan Galani, and producer Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. Good night, everyone.